Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 119 for comics originally released on November 18th, 2009. Now, starting us off in DC is Brave and the Bold number 29. And I noticed at the top they've got this new tagline of lost stories from yesterday, today, and tomorrow.
Which, yeah, it seems like it's kind of acknowledging that it's acknowledging that they're not necessarily in current continuity, but it's not really implying that they're out of continuity stories.
Exactly.
They're as yet untold stories.
So, and it kind of implies that these are one, I mean, it's funny because they're other titles where I think that would have been the perfect tagline because they were clearly inventory stories. These are clearly new stories, but, you know, if he wants to play a little fast and loose to where in the timeline they fit, that's fine. Now, with the previous issue with Dial H for Hero, I had some issues as to could it really fit in the timeline or not. This one, actually, I'm not very familiar with Brother Power the Geek, but let's face it, there's not that much to be familiar with. The series ran for, what, two issues?
Two issues, yeah, two.
And I think he's shown up in Swamp Thing Annual, which I'm pretty sure I read, but don't really recall. And then according to ComicBookDB, he was listed as being in the Blasters special, but I don't recall him being in that.
I vaguely recall that there was a Blasters special. I'm sure I read it back in the 90s when it came out. That kind of came out after the one of those events.
The Invasion, I think.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, and the team was
with Snapper Carr getting his teleportation powers.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there's not much of Brother Power the Geek to be familiar with. So I was kind of going in, you know, with a lack of familiarity there. And while I thought this story was a little heavy-handed in a few places, particularly when there was kind of the comparison between, like, the 1960s and now, overall, I thought this was a very good story and really an excellent revival for Brother Power the Geek. It created him, or recreated him, or whatever, it situated him as a really unique character that I think would be fun to see pop up from time to time in the DC Universe. Now, I think the flashback sequences artistically could have been a little clearer that they were flashback sequences, but overall, I was very pleased with this issue, and I think it's one of the better things Straczynski's done, you know, really lately.
No, I think it was a good standalone issue, and the one thing that I've been liking about Brave and the Bold lately is that you can just pick up an issue and read it, and there's a self-contained story in it, and you don't really need to know a whole lot elsewise going in. You can read that issue and enjoy it in most cases, and then, go on about your business. And this is no different. I mean, this is a nice, enjoyable, standalone story. I came in with, like, very low expectations for, you know, Brother Power the Geek for, you know, similar reasons. Just kind of a, almost like a standing joke kind of a character. You know, people, when they want to talk about a lame character, they'll usually throw out Brother Power the Geek, you know?
Right, right. Well, just like it used to be that way with Animal Man before, you know, that series back in the 80s.
Right.
You know, he was literally one of the forgotten heroes when they had that team show up, I guess, in Action Comics or wherever. But it's nice to see them take a character that's arguably a lame or unused or hard-to-use character and do something pretty cool with it. And that's what I think happened here.
So, yeah, I'm very pleased with how Straczynski handled the issue in general. I think he did a really good job on it. So I give it a 4. Good solid 4.
That's what I gave it to. It wasn't quite a 5, but it was close, and it was definitely well above average. So to me, it landed squarely in that 4 rating.
Yeah, and I would say anyone who has not tried out the series, you know, if you want to give an issue a try, this is not a bad issue to give a try.
Yeah. I would have appreciated if either on the last page or the DC Nation page or somewhere in here, they'd given an indication of what character was going to be in the next issue. I mean, it's not a big deal, certainly doesn't detract from this story, but just from a marketing point of view, there's nothing to pull a reader into the next issue.
True. So, I want to jump over to Marvel. We've got Realm of Kings, the one-shot, and I'd suggested we also kind of toss in and talk about the two mini-series that tie into that event that have come out, the Realm of Kings Imperial Guard number one and Realm of Kings Inhumans number one.
I have caught up on Nova, Guardians of the Galaxy, and the other, I think there was one or two other things that seemed tangentially related to the Realm of Kings stuff. So I think I'm current on that corner of the Marvel Universe. Now, I had slightly mixed feelings about Realm of Kings itself. I mean, I've said it before and I'll say it again. Abnett and Lanning are just doing a great job kind of carving out this new corner of the Marvel Universe and creating, or recreating or whatever, a viable line of titles around the Shi'ar, the Kree, you know, the Inhumans, all that kind of stuff. What they're doing with Nova, I'm just loving. What they're doing with Guardians of the Galaxy, I think, is great. What they've done with the Annihilation stuff, Annihilation Conquest, War of Kings, overall, they're just knocking it out of the park. And while I felt they told a really good story here in Realm of Kings, I felt what was at the other end of the fault was a little bit cliche, actually. And I found it interesting that this story was really about the fault and what's at the other end of it, whereas the Imperial Guard and Humans miniseries are more about the space empires that we've really gotten to know.
What actually happens in the Realm of Kings that is the fallout of the...
Exactly.
Of the last mini. You know, so it's... I felt the exact same way. It's like I was very... I was interested to know what's at the other end of the fault, but the amount of time that they spent on it, liking of the art that they used and just, you know, how it all came together, I was less than enthused about the overall issue. I mean, it was kind of like it could have been the same amount of information could have been imparted to me as a, you know, 3-page interlude in a story that was a lot more like the Realm of Kings Inhumans issue.
I would have called this the Realm of Kings Quasar miniseries or one-shot, and frankly, I don't know that we needed much more than we got here. I think it was a good use of Quasar and kind of got him back into the limelight or whatever, but I agree, this seemed to be totally tangential to the Realm of Kings itself, and I felt what was at the other end of the fault, again, We've seen this sort of thing before. We've seen it recently. We've seen it recently at Marvel. So, I don't know where they're going with this, and I really hope they're able to pull it out, because with this first issue, while I enjoyed it and I thought it was good, I don't think it's as good as Abnett and Lanning are capable of.
Well, I was glad it was a one-shot. And I'll tell you what, I mean, it's the Realm of Kings one-shot, to me, it was like a low 3. I think it was somewhat missable. And I've been really enjoying the cosmic part of the universe that Abnett and Lanning have been telling. But this particular one, just like, you know, okay. No one bats 1,000, I guess, is the, you know.
I was wavering between a 3 and a 4 on this. Because I like Quasar. I like some of what they did here. I thought it was a good issue. I thought it was a little above average. But, you know, particularly comparing it against everything else they've been doing lately, it wasn't a solid 4 for me either, and I'm still kind of on the fence there. And you're right, it's a one-shot. For some reason, I was thinking this was going to be another, you know, ongoing miniseries kind of a thing. And as a one-shot, that certainly helps it. But on the other hand, I don't know where to pick up Quasar's story after this either. So,
yeah. I'm figuring he'll be in either Nova or Guardians. He's been popping up in those.
I would kind of figure Nova, but yeah. The point is, though, it's not clear from this, and it really ought to be, because there's nowhere for me to to directly go if I want to continue the story.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give this a 3. It's, I think, a little above average in places, a little below in some places. And if you're looking for a good example of what Advent and Lanning are capable of, this is not it.
Yeah, I would direct you instead to the Realm of Kings Inhumans miniseries.
Yeah, I like the Imperial Guard one, but I think the Inhumans one was stronger.
To me, the Imperial Guard, the Inhumans series, this, to me, was a continuation of what I've been loving from them that's been going on since the original Annihilation series. This particular series carries on that spirit and that thread for me. Mm-hmm. If all I had had was the one shot and the Imperial Guard miniseries, I would have, you know, said, okay, like, I'm kind of done with this now.
No, I can see that, because I agree with that, particularly the, okay, Black Bolt's missing, we've got to go find him plot line, and aspects of that very much draw straight out of War of Kings. Whereas the Imperial Guard, while I liked it, it is feeling a little bit more tangential and not as much of the core of the overarching storyline.
Yeah, now, you know, for me, and again, it's a lot of the art. You know, the thing on the one shot, I just wasn't personally that enthused about the who is it, Leonardo Manco, who does the majority of the art, you know, filling out the area and the fault. I just wasn't that enthused about that. And similarly, the art in the Shi'ar, the Imperial Guard special, the Kevin Walker art,
mm-hmm.
I was just not that. My personal taste in mainstream superhero art, this was not scratching that itch. You know what I mean? This is the kind of thing where this kind of art would, it looks a lot like,
I'd almost go with a bad Barry Windsor Smith.
Could be, or even like Paul Azaceta, who does the Potter's Field, I think, with Mark Waid.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, it's that kind of art, and it's like, yeah, I can do this kind of art for that kind of story, like Potter's Field, or like kind of maybe a noir crime kind of thing. But for superheroes and space opera, it just doesn't work for me. And that's a completely personal kind of judgment. It's not a knock on the guy's art, because for me anyway, art's really contextual. You know, I can really love a particular artist's style when he's illustrating a particular book or a particular genre, but then when he moves to another one, it just doesn't work for me. And this is, to me, a case where I don't intrinsically dislike the art, but I dislike it on this book.
Well, this is a book that, because it's got the Imperial Guard, you almost need to have something that's got a very standard superhero feel to it. Because, I mean, these guys are essentially the Legion of Superheroes.
Yeah.
And I would agree, the art was not the highlight of this for me, and you know, I thought it was a good story, but not one that I think, oh, wow, this is great. This is, again, a high point of the stuff. I'm curious where they're going with it. I liked that the Starjammers are going to, you know, play a part in all this. But the one thing they haven't done quite yet with the Imperial Guard in this issue is suitably differentiate it from the Legion of Superheroes. You know, you've got the guy who's essentially Brainiac 5 acting essentially like Brainiac 5. They're not, I'm granted, you've got a ton of characters here that it's hard to really, you know, make them all new and unique in a couple of pages or whatever, but it's something I'd like to see them start to do with the Imperial Guard. But I would definitely say that the Inhumans is looking to be the core of the Realm of Kings stuff, and was by far, you know, out of these three, the best. I thought it just had some excellent art, it had some really good story, and, you know, it was just very enjoyable.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I am not going to get the rest of the issues of the Imperial Guard miniseries.
Hmm.
I'll maybe pick them up out of a bin somewhere down the line, but I'm just not interested. And the Inhumans one I loved.
Yeah. Well, and again, to me, there was a night and day difference in the art there. And for my personal tastes, what they did in the Inhumans, that's the kind of style I really gravitate towards and really enjoy.
Right.
Whereas the style they used on the Imperial Guard one, I agree it would fit better on other types of things, and for the story they were telling, it didn't totally click with me.
So what did you rate? I mean, to me, Inhumans was a high 4, still a 4.
Inhumans, I would give a 4. With the Imperial Guard, I'd probably give that a 3.
Yeah, I can see that. And like for me, the Imperial Guard one slipped down into a 2, and I have to give it a 2 just from the standpoint that I went out of my way to take it off my currently editable DCBS pull list.
Yeah. The Inhumans, again, that was the highlight.
Then we have our independent book, which is Drone from Red 5 Comics.
What did you think of this one?
I liked it. I liked it a lot. In fact, way back when, you know, we had made the statement that Red 5 had not put out a single thing that, you know, I didn't like. At least I said that. Mm-hmm. And then at a certain point, they kind of veered off and they started putting out several series that didn't click with me. Zombies of Mass Destruction being one. While well done, We Kill Monsters, just not something that I was that enthusiastic about. But they're back in my sweet spot with this series, Drone, because I really liked this story.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. I think the art was a little rough in places. It fit what they were trying to do, though, so it didn't seem out of place. And I really did like the design for the droids. I thought that was kind of a cool look, and you know, since they're the central part of the story, it worked. The computer geek becomes reluctant hero via state-of-the-art robot war drones. I'm not going to say we've seen this before kind of a thing, but it feels like a cliche sci-fi movie of the week kind of a plot line. They do a good job with it here. They have some fun with it. That it pretty much makes sense how they get there. A little cliche and predictable in a few places, but nature of the beast, and I don't see that as a bad thing. This is something, though, I could easily see turning into like a summer blockbuster movie or a sci-fi movie of the week kind of a thing, and being a very enjoyable one. What they did here I liked. There are a few things where the tech level is almost magic, where the guy is just suddenly, you know, turning his Wii controller into, you know, part of the thing to go, you know, hack into these droid, you know, drones or whatever and run them.
Sci-fi staple, kind of like Jeff Goldblum in Independence Day, where he's taking his Mac and, like, hacking into the alien mainframe, you know?
Exactly.
it's okay.
You know. That's the kind of cliche part of the things that, you know what I mean? It doesn't make any sense, but it's a standard of the genre.
A little girl in Jurassic Park is like, oh, this is a Unix operating system. I could get in and do whatever I want, you know? Like, okay. I guess I'll roll with it.
And, you know,
it's a story.
They had some fun with it. They did some cool stuff. And I'm looking forward to seeing where they go with this. You know, I think there's a number of directions they could go. And, you know, it's I enjoyed it. Personally, I would say this is above average. It's certainly not a 5 out of 5, but to me it was a good solid 4.
Yeah, I gave it I would give it a good solid 4 also. I was thoroughly entertained by it. I'm looking forward to reading the rest of the 4-issue miniseries. And, you know, I thought they did a nice job of just giving us a, you know, kind of fun action type of story
that
drew me in. And it's not something that I've seen so many times, although there are certain elements of it. You know, most stories have elements that are, you know, somewhat, you know, well, I've seen that before kind of elements, you know.
But part of that is just the nature of the genre kind of a thing. You
right.
tell a Western, you're going to have certain things you've seen before. You tell a sci-fi story like this, you're going to have certain things you've kind of seen before. So I don't mind that there are a few things that were a little cliche, a little predictable, whatever. It was a well-told story, and those things fit how they needed to, and I liked how they kind of play fair and set up. It's like, okay, they're not in a position where the real guys who should be controlling the drones can just step in and save the day or whatever. They've already addressed that issue. You know, so, again, this is something that, out of all the stuff Red 5's done, I think is one of the ones that lends itself most to a live action or, you know, animated or CG kind of a movie treatment or whatever.
Yeah, I could see it being a movie. And, you know, that's not a knock. It's just like when Radical does things that, you know, can be turned into movies. That doesn't mean that they're not a good comic book. It just means that they also lend themselves to being adapted to another medium. And yeah. I think this could make a good movie.
Well, and what I like is it's got the things that would make for the school cool special effects, the droids and stuff, or the drones or whatever as they would probably prefer they be called, and the standard, okay, you got a couple of geeks, you know, doing their thing or whatever. So it's got the mix of the humor and the sci-fi. I'm looking forward to see where they go with this, and, you know, like you were saying before, Red 5 at one point couldn't miss with us. At one point, they had a couple of misses, a couple of things that just didn't quite click with us. I wouldn't put Drone up with Atomic Robo or some of the best stuff they've done, but to me, they're back going in the right direction.
Right. I mean, it's more in that realm of, for me, you know, like Abyss and...
Yeah, I was going to mention Abyss, yeah.
That, what was that, Night One? The Hero, you know, K-N-I-G-H-T.
Oh.
Is that Hero?
Yeah, yeah. They did an issue or two of that one.
Yeah. It's you know, right in there. I mean, I still like... Atomic Robo and Neozoic were fives to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And this is a good solid four. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
So on page count wise and price, we had pretty much all of these issues, except for the Realm of Kings one shot, were 22 pages. The Realm of Kings one shot was 26 pages of story and art. So we have the Brave and the Bold is our standard $2.99. 22-page book. Nothing new there. What does that come out to? About 13.1 cents.
Yeah.
And then we have our Realm of Kings miniseries. Those are $3.99 series for 22 pages. And same thing with Drone, $3.95. So, you know, a whopping 4 cents cheaper. But they're all 22 pages. So, you know, consequently more expensive entertainment per page, and then you got the extra 4 pages for the extra dollar with the Realm of Kings one shot.
And, you know, I'm okay with something like Drone from Red 5 being a $3.95 comic for 22 pages of story, because, I mean, these guys are operating on a closer to a shoestring budget, and they're simply not going to get into as many stores as a Marvel or DC book or whatever. Would I prefer it if it was $2.99? Well, certainly, but I want these guys making enough money and stuff that they're, you know, breaking even, making enough profit that they keep going. And when you look at how Red 5 at one point was coming out with a lot more stuff, and then they kind of pulled back and now have a more focused line or whatever, I want to make sure they stick around for the long haul, even if they're not coming out with tons of comics every month. I want them to come out with comics every month.
Mm-hmm.
So the $3.95 I think is a fair price in that
right.
case. So what else did you get this week?
Oh, what else did I get this week? That's a fair question. Let me.
I kind of thought so. I thought it was a really good question. Actually, I thought it was a brilliant question. Since you're not ready to answer, I'll tell you what else I got.
You tell me, and I'll look up what I got this week.
I got a ton of stuff. I actually read quite a bit. With this being, you know, Thanksgiving weekend and stuff, I've read about 20 comics or something. Some of that was catching up on Nova, Guardians of the Galaxy, a few things like that. Read some Blackest Night stuff. So I got, you know, that Adventure Comics that had the blue ring. I got the Outsiders that had the Sapphire ring, the Star Sapphire ring or whatever. Got the Powers Encyclopedia, which finally came out. That was one they'd resolicited a time or two. I'm a sucker for these kinds of handbook things, but there was something about this one that just didn't click with me. Maybe it was the fact that every other page, everybody was deceased, or the fact that for the powers section, they've got a little line entry along with, you know, what state do they live in kind of a thing. It's like, yep, got powers, you know, kind of a thing. And I wasn't expecting a Marvel Universe-sized entry on the superpowers, but I don't know, it just, it didn't quite work for me. What else did I get that was good? Read the Superman Batman Blackest Night stuff. It was, I'm going to say, one of the weaker parts of the Blackest Night stuff.
Yeah, I read that particular issue, and I thought it was pretty feeble. Let me just say that much. It came as close as you could come to being a Red Sky crossover, trying to just suck in some sales off of the popularity of the Blackest Night banner. Oh. I thought it was a really, really weak story, and anyone who's not bought that Superman Batman issue and is considering it just because they it has the Blackest Night banner, I would recommend against it.
I would also recommend against, but I think it was more than just a Red Sky crossover. I think it was a Solomon Grundy 8, you know,
yeah,
kind of a continuation thing. But even that, I felt was kind of, did they need to have a 7-issue series on the character? So unless you're a huge fan of Man-Bat, Bizarro, or Solomon Grundy, there's no real reason to pick that up. And even if you are.
When I say Red Sky crossover, I mean it had nothing particularly to add to the core Blackest Night story.
Yeah, but, I mean, typically or traditionally...
You don't even get a ring for it. You know, it's like...
I thought Solomon Grundy had a ring the whole
was
time.
Was that the... No, I'm saying you don't even get a free ring.
Oh,
that
yeah,
was
yeah.
Even one of the books that you buy just to get a ring, you know, for...
But my only point was it's not like a classic Red Sky crossover where in a panel or two the sky turns red and that's
true.
It. The whole story centered around a, you know, guy, with Solomon Grundy with a black ring or whatever, but I agree, it's not pivotal to the overall storyline like some of the other stuff has been. So easily skippable.
So I read about 70 comics this week, at least. So... That's why I was having a little trouble just calling them all to mind. So I read all the Blackest Night crossovers, of course. So I read the Adventure Comics. I thought that one was okay. The Outsiders, I ended up having to catch up on. I think I had, like, Outsiders stacked up from about issue 20.
Wow.
So I read, you know, all the way up from 20 through 24. The Outsiders won a little better. You know, they have Terra in there, and as I'm reading through it, though, what I am determining is that I'm enjoying Outsiders far less than I had been when it first came out.
I can see that. I think that's one where the series hasn't really gelled, and I don't see it having the momentum or trajectory or whatever to really sustain itself for the long haul. It seems to be limping along okay. And I'm not disliking it. I'm just not loving it, thinking, oh, wow, they've got to keep this thing going forever.
Yeah. I caught up, you know, I'm current on the Superman and Batman franchises. So, you know, I've read, it came out in this shipment, you know, the Supergirl 17, as well as... Action Comics came out last week, and you know the Superman that came out the week before that, and I read the you know latest New World and New Krypton that came out, and I've read the you know Batgirl, and I had a couple issues of Batman stacked up, and Batman and Robin, and the Booster Gold Blackest Night special. I read the. Did we talk about last week the first issue of Strange?
No, we didn't, and I still haven't read it.
Okay. I did not care for it. I went into it saying, thinking, you know, well, Mark Waid, you know, can do no wrong. And it's probably my least favorite Mark Waid story I can read that I've read in recent memory.
Mm.
So I'll be interested after you read it. It just was completely not what I was expecting, and this kind of goes along with, you know, as I, you know, bring it up, it's like he had, I think it's, again, Paul Azaceta, who does the Potter's Field with him, was doing the art on it. Is that right? No. It was Emma Rios who did the art on Hexed.
Right, right.
The one I'm thinking of is the latest issue of Spider-Man that he did. He had Paul Azaceta. And, you know, I've been reading up on Spider-Man, and the last several issues of Spider-Man, I have not been like, Spider-Man, it's been like at the top of my stack, Amazing Spider-Man, and I've been loving it. And then they had that Deadpool issue, which was...
Yeah, I'm still behind, you know, on Spider-Man, too.
And so. Then they had an issue where, you know, they've got Paul Azaceta doing the art on it, which is just completely not, to me, suitable for doing a, you know, mainstream Spider-Man book. I love it when he's doing Potter's Field, you know, but again, it's that contextual, not enjoying it kind of thing. Caught up on Green Arrow, caught up on, you know, pretty much most of the Marvel and DC titles I caught up on. I caught up on a lot of my Vertigo books. I read like the last five issues of Hellblazer in a row and, you know, House of Mystery and those kind of things. So it's just big stacks of books.
Yeah. Now I've still got probably over 200 in my backlog to go through, but I've at least started to make a dent into it, so I'm happy with that.
What about Dark X-Men? Did you read that?
No, did not. I did read Flash Rebirth, Irredeemable. What else? Not all that much from this week. Because, again, I was trying to just fill in a couple of things before talking about, you know, Realm of Kings and that kind of stuff.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I had so much stuff from previous weeks to catch up on that I actually read less from this week than I've read from some of the previous weeks.
I still have the majority of the last 3 weeks, I think, unread. So I'm getting to the point where I need to be reading, you know, two issues for everything we do versus the one. Those were things I was starting to try to tackle.
Yeah.
So, anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That does it for me. Join us next week when we discuss Justice League of America number 39 from DC, The Incredible Hercules number 138 from Marvel, and Buck Rogers number 6 from Dynamite Entertainment.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.